Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. It's Monday, August the 11th. Happy to be back. We're off last week. Where Dale Jr. wound up taking the win at Pocono. We'll be joined in a little bit by NHRA Pro Stock Points Leader Erica Ender Stevens. Talk about the next two races and then the countdown to the championship, which is the following six after that. We have four races to go until NASCAR hits their chase. They'll be in Michigan this weekend. The NHRA will be out at Brainerd, Minnesota for the Lucas Oil Nationals. So it should get pretty interesting and jam-packed this weekend for motorsports. Of course, join later in the show Tammy Allman, who handles dirt tracks for Garage Talk Live. We'll be joining us to talk about dirt track safety. I'm sure it's all over the news, whether it's accurate or not in your area. What happened with Tony Stewart Saturday night at a dirt track event in upstate New York, where Kevin Ward was killed after exiting his car and getting hit by Stewart. After getting bumped out of the way. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So right now, I guess might as well talk about the NHRA, where the Mellow Yellow series will be in action this coming week from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for four rounds of qualifying plus eliminations on Sunday. And they'll set the stage for going into the countdown. Of course, our Erica Enders did not run the last two events and was still able to hold on to the top spot in points. But the gap that she had been dwindled down to now Alan Johnson, 32 back, and Jason Lyne was 37 back. And, of course, the last two legs of the Western Swing was Erica's closest pursuers had a bad week. And then the last week of the Western Swing in Seattle, they made up the ground. So fortunately, she still has the points lead already locked into the countdown, as the top seven are in the Pro Stock Series. She wasn't in any danger of losing that, but she could have dropped positions in the way they reset their points. We'll see how that goes into the countdown. Of course, we got Brainerd this week, and then Indy. And then they go down to Z-Max and Charlotte to start the countdown. So hopefully Erica will join us in a few. And I think that's her right now. Let me welcome to the show the current NHRA Pro Stock Division points leader, Erica Ender Stevens. Erica, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I was kind of shocked when I saw you weren't in the last two events on the Western Swing. I guess the first one out of Pomona didn't cause so much damage because your closest competition went out early in eliminations, and then AJ and them kind of caught back up to you in Seattle there, but fortunately you still have the lead.
Yeah, we're fortunate enough to come off that deal with the lead. I think we're still ahead by 30-some-odd points, so that's pretty cool going into Brainerd. I mean, we just got to pick up where we left off and hit the ground running and hopefully win some races.
That's it. You got two more until the countdown, right? You have Brainerd, then Indy, and then all the fun begins.
Then it all begins, four in a row.
So what are you looking forward to going in the, I mean, was it a sponsor thing that you didn't run the events, or we figured you were already locked in and into the countdown?
We just wanted to be as prepared as possible for the countdown. I mean, we have a smaller team and a smaller budget than the rest of those pro stock guys out there. And when we go racing, you know, our entire team comes with us. We don't leave anybody back at the shop to work on stuff. So that was a big reason to allow the guys to, you know, get some things done in the engine development program and try some new things out and try to gain horsepower while the other guys were out there racing. And, you know, we did just that. We met our goals. And, you know, we're also bringing out two other cars starting in Indy, one driven by my husband, Richie Stevens, and the other one will be Shane Tucker returning from Australia. So we just needed to get all our ducks in a row. And, you know, this has been the most amazing season for me and my entire team. And we just want to take advantage of every aspect of it as we can and set ourselves up as the best position we can be in to go into the countdown and try to win this championship.
I know that's the thing. I mean, when they reset the points, I guess they don't have that much of a differential anyway for the countdown for when you start off. So missing a couple weeks didn't really matter. But the good thing is you're still in the top spot holding on. So, and the thing about it is you were running real well up until then.
Yeah, we're running awesome. We're having a great year. And you know, the countdown is interesting in the aspect that it doesn't matter if you're 1 point ahead or a million points ahead, it still goes back to zero after Indy. So, you know, that also played into our decision, and we just needed to be prepared the best we could when we come back, and that's what we've done. So I'm really excited and optimistic about the rest of the year, and, you know, our decision was not one that we wanted to be perceived negatively. It just, we've got to do what's best for our team, and at the time, that's what was best.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. It was just a shock to, you know, turn on the
We wanted to go race, and believe me, I wanted to be out there. I hated watching, and I know that, you know, had we been out there, we'd have run right at the top with those guys and been fighting for that trophy. So, but it is what it is, and we made that decision, and we just hope that it benefits us the way we think it will, and we'll go from there.
Do you feel that when you're on a roll and do that, though, that, you know, then you're sitting on the sideline watching, biting the fingernails, I'm sure they were probably chewed off by the end of the Western swing.
Yeah.
That,
it was a little interesting, a little stressful. I mean, I'm not much of a spectator. I'm not good at that for some reason. I guess after having driven for so long, it makes it tough to watch. But, you know, AJ is a good friend of mine, and he's nipping at our heels right now, and I talked with him, you know, every day that he was out there racing with him and his wife, and, you know, of course, I wish him the best of luck, but at the same time, we want to keep our points lead, but that's how I stayed informed was through him, and I didn't really watch it on TV or on the internet or anything, but we did record it and fast forward and watch Pro Stock, like, after the weekend was over, and just Sonoma was really hard for me because it was the first one. In Seattle, I was just, like, decided to ignore it after that. But I'm so excited to get back behind the wheel.
I bet. Now, going into Brainerd, I guess you're all set for – I don't know what the weather is supposed to be like out there, whether it's supposed to be cool or hot, or it is Minnesota, so I guess it'll be kind of – it's just kind of fall-like temperatures, I would think, this
time
of year.
Yeah, like southern Canada. It's supposed to be nice. I mean, a week out, the weather's still, you know, kind of iffy. It's not exact, but we're looking at highs in the low 80s and lows in the 50s. So it's going to be quite a bit cooler than, you know, the rest of the races that we've experienced this summer. So that'll be a nice break for us to not just die of heat exhaustion out there. But I'm looking forward to going back to Brainerd. It's a beautiful part of the country, and the fans are awesome, and the track's pretty cool, and It's a fun race, definitely a fun race.
And you should be able to make some good horsepower in the cooler temperatures.
Yes, sir. That's the plan.
Now, looking ahead to Indy, that's the biggest race on the NHRA Mellow Yellow schedule. It's, seems like everybody I talk to saying that's the one event everybody wants to win, and being that the fact that it's the race before the countdown makes it that much more intense.
Yeah, it's definitely intense weekend. I mean, it's an important race. It's the Super Bowl of our sport, so very prestigious, and it's got a lot of history. So I'm excited. I mean, we went there in 2012, and I runnered up, and I feel like I have some unfinished business there. That one got stolen from me, and we're going to go back and fight tooth and nail to get one done this year.
I think there's a few tracks that you can make that claim to, that you have some unfinished business at, though.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been doing this long enough that, you know, you've got your lucky tracks out there, and then you've got the ones that you generally don't do so well at, but definitely a lot of runner-up finishes that we need to go back and capitalize on.
Now, going into the countdown, are there any tracks that you feel that you need to get a little bit more of an edge at, or are they pretty much all in the ballpark or where you've been successful?
I mean, we've had success at a few of them, but, like, we start the countdown in Charlotte, and we've run it up there, I think, three times. So never won at Charlotte. It's definitely a good track, and being the first race of the countdown, we don't, you know, we need to start off on the right foot. So that's definitely important. From Charlotte, we go to Dallas. I've runnered up there a couple times too, never won. So being that that's in my home state, I'd like to do well there. From Dallas, we go on to St. Louis, which we've won the last 2 years in a row. So I'm hopeful that lucky streak continues there. And from there, we go to Reading. That's my birthday weekend. Vegas, we won this spring, and then Pomona, which I've never won. So there's a handful of them that are good to me, and the others, I hope we just have our stuff together and we're ready to roll.
Sounds like it's pretty interesting in that way, because I figure the first couple tracks there, qualifying is going to be an emphasis on it. You still gather the same points you do throughout during the season for the countdown. So qualifying number one, that you've done quite a bit this year, to gain some of those bonus points would really help.
Yeah, those baby points certainly do add up, and they're, you know, a big reason why we had such a big lead going into Sonoma, rather. And you know, you can accumulate 12 extra points during qualifying for being the quickest of every session. And that's more than a half of a round of racing, because every round's worth 20 points. So it definitely adds up, and we've had a good year so far with qualifying. I think all of the events that we ran, we qualified first or second, and then once we qualified third. So we've had a good year qualifying up to this point, and I'm sure hopeful that trend continues and we go out there and get every little point that we can get.
Well, that's what we'd like to see, and it'll be good to see you back at the event this weekend. How are the other two cars? Your husband's going to be racing one of them. Are you going to have to put him in his place, I guess, during qualifying or eliminations? Hopefully he gets a 16th spot and you get the first spot.
No, he'll definitely be better than on the bump. He's running the Elite Performance Horsepower, so he'll have a really fast race car as well. It's a brand new Rick Jones Camaro and a team car to us, so it'll be a good experience. And you know, we've certainly talked crap to each other for the last couple months leading up to this, knowing that we might have to race each other. So it'll be all in good fun and really great for, you know, Elite Motorsports and Elite Performance.
I guess ideally it'd be you and him in the finals against each other, and you walking home with the Wally for the points.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would definitely be an ideal situation to have to race him in the finals of the U.S. Nationals. And either way, our team's going home with the trophy, so that's all that matters.
Well, he should be the gentleman and not get get too antsy there on the, to wrap it up.
No, he better race heads up. I don't want nothing that I don't learn.
Well, that's true, but I'm just trying to be funny anyway. I expect him to go full out.
I know,
and try
I got you.
To beat the points leader. I beat the points
well,
leader.
Right? That's part of his joke to me is like, I don't mind sleeping on the couch if I kick your butt in the finals. And haha, that goes both ways. Some fun banter with that. And just do our best and let God do the rest and see what happens.
Well, that's for sure. We got to get you some sponsors out there, too. I mean, maybe you can go to Sammy Hagar and get some Cabo Wabo on the side, being you have Patron with Alexis and get some,
that would
more,
be
get
awesome.
Some more tequila out there. Who's your marketer? Send them out to the
Sorry,
Cabo
there's
San
about
Lucas.
8 million dogs over here.
Oh, that's okay. I'm just hoping my cats don't act up. I have 5 cats, and every once in a while they get a little antsy.
I'm up at the shop in Oklahoma, and my team owner's got, I think, 8 dogs that run around here, so they're all crazy.
So you're based out of Oklahoma. I know what. You're from Houston, and you live in New Orleans. And
yes, sir. That's
shop
correct.
Out in Oklahoma.
Yeah, the shop's about an hour south of Oklahoma City, in a little town called Winniewood. But, Richard Freeman's built a really awesome facility. Our engine shop is state-of-the-art and got all the best equipment. And so I really enjoy being here. It's a first-class operation, and my team's pretty cool, too.
Well, that's good to see, and it's great to see you having all this success this year. I want to talk to you the day, whatever show I do after you're crowned champ.
That sounds good to me. For me, I live to God's ears. I hope that happens. I mean, we're definitely in the best position, like I said a minute ago, that we've ever been in. So we're going to try to capitalize on that and just do our best.
Well, that's good to hear, and good luck this weekend in Brainerd, and I'll let you get back to getting that hot rod all set up there.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So good talking to you, and we'll be watching for you to take home that Wally this weekend.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye.
There you have it, the pro stock points leader. Imagine that, having enough of a lead where you could take some time off to work on your car, knowing you're locked in. I'm sure she would have rather been out on the track with all the momentum she had built up. And it's just good to see that she's getting back into it. I'm sure those... good to have her on and off week. So get on that plane or after the weekend in Brainerd. Fortunately, out there in Oklahoma there where they can build the cars. It's amazing where these race teams have their shops. The NHRA seems to be a little bit more spread out than NASCAR, which has them all in the Charlotte area pretty much, except for Furniture Row, which is out in Colorado, and a couple others that are a little bit further out, but usually they're all centered around the Charlotte, Mooresville area, which is just outside of Charlotte. It's outside the city, just into the suburbs, and most of the drivers there live in Lake Norman anyway, which is kind of like the ritzy resort. But if we look at the points, she's locked in. Of course, set her Alan Johnson, who is behind. There is 32 points behind. Jason Lyon, he's third. He's 37 behind. So then Jake Coughlin is 101 behind. He's in fourth. Dave Connolly, who used to be Erica's old crew chief last year, he's in the fifth spot, 154 back. Shane Gray's in the sixth. Vincent Nobile, he's in the seventh. And they're the only pro stock drivers locked into the countdown. Of course, eighth, ninth, 8th, 9th, and 10th probably will be. It's V. Gaines. He should make it. Then Chris McGahey and Greg Anderson, who did make the top 10, bumping Jonathan Gray out. So there was a flip there after Pomona in Seattle. And I know Greg Anderson's looking for a win. So the field's like he's countdown worthy. He said it in several press conferences, but he's still coming back from heart surgery, so takes a little bit back in and getting in the groove. Of course, in the funny car, the only people locked into the countdown right now is John Force and Robert Height. Height being in first place, he has a 47-point lead over his boss, John Force. Courtney's in fourth. She's 291 back. And sandwiched around the Force family in the middle there at third is Ronnie Capp. So, and he only has a 9-point lead over Courtney. So that could change this week with third and fourth locking in. And you know, it goes further down the line with Tim Wilkerson in the 10th spot. They're not locked in from three on down. In the top field division, it's Doug Kalita with a 76-point lead over second-place Antron Brown, who was a champ 2 years ago. And then third-place last year's champ, Sean Langdon. They're the only three to clinch the playoff berth. So they will be bringing it on in this weekend to narrow it down and then going into the U.S. Nationals at Indianapolis. It'll be where it all sets the stage. Now, of course, the Camping World Truck Series in the was off this weekend, but the Nationwide Series and the Cup Series were in action. Nationwide at the Glen, it was Marcus Ambrose holding off Kyle Busch in a battle. They were bumping pretty good for a while there. Ambrose leading twice for 48 laps, led the most out of the 82-lap event. It's hard to believe that the Nationwide race was 82 laps. So it was the Zippo 200. He was able to hold off. That was his fourth consecutive win in the Nationwide Series at the Glen. So he looked pretty good for coming off of that race, going into the Cheez-It 355 on Sunday. He held off a hard-charging Kyle Busch, Joey Logano. Brad Keselowski was fourth. Fifth was Matt Kenseth. Chase Elliott was sixth. Good run for him in the rookie. Probably just keeping his nose clean, following guys in front of him, staying out of trouble, which is what you do when you're the points leader on a different type of track. Elliott Sadler was seventh. Ty Dillon eighth. Ninth, Paul Menard. Brian Scott, 10th, 2-hour, 10-minute race. Margin of victory, second and a half. That was what Ambrose was able to step it out to before taking the checkered flag. Wow, Glen is a 2.45-mile road course. I thought it was about a 2-mile road course, a little bigger than that, 82 laps for the 200 miles. Average speed of 92.46. Chase Elliott leads the points. He has a 12-point lead over Reagan Smith. In second, Elliott Sadler is in third. He's 13 back. Ty Dillon is fourth, tied with Sadler. Fifth is Brian Scott. Sixth, Trevor Bayne. Brendan Gaughan in seventh, eighth, Chris Buescher, Ninth, Ryan Reed, and 10th is James Buescher. Well, there's your nationwide results, and and standings there. Into the Cup Series, Tony Stewart pulled out of the race after what happened on Saturday night at a local dirt track up in the area. It's sad what happened. Thought some prayers out to Kevin Ward and his family. We're going to be joined by Tammy Allman, who handles a lot of our dirt track detail for Garage Talk Live. Let's bring her to the phone. Like to welcome to the show Tammy Allman, our dirt track expert here at Garage Talk Live. Welcome back, girl. I guess you've been getting hammered a bit with all the your boy Smoke getting. I saw the video in its entirety before all the networks cut it off, and from what I can gather, just so before we get into all the naysayers and all that kind of stuff, the guy was barely visible, and if he's coming around a turn and Smoke's got to make the turn, his back end's going to be wide. He's not really going to see him sitting in that car. And personally,
right.
I think the guy went too deep into the field to try to, I thought it was, in my mind, not to be critical and speak ill of the dead, but the fact he was trying to be a wee bit macho and point down Smoke, because he's a big name in the field, make it look like he was standing up to him or something, just was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, no matter who it is you're racing against, when you're going for positions and something goes wrong, drivers are going to get heated, they're going to get mad, and they're going to want to express it. That's a lot of the tracks that I attend and that I work with, they have the rule. You don't get out of the car unless the official tell you that. And if you do get out of the car, well, you're looking at pretty much getting suspended if you do anything. One of the things that I'm really grateful for is the tracks that I work with, we have officials in all the corners, and we have fire crew in all the corners. Which means before Smoke would have even gotten back around, we would have had an official with the driver controlling him, pulling him back away, which
right.
One of the biggest things, there haven't been officials there on the scene. As soon as they've seen him getting out of the car, we would have had an official up there with him first off. We would have had an official. We would have had fire crew already on the scene making sure everything's secure, tow trucks, push trucks, whatever apparatus we would have needed on the scene, because that's one of the things that our tracks have really drilled into our crews is you need to be there because, okay, he didn't slip, but he took a hard hit. It is a sprint car, so they do have the tendency to roll over. They should have had crews ready to go, knowing that they can't start on their own. Even if he could have rolled away, he would have needed a push truck, but in this instance, obviously a tow truck. Where were the apparatus? Where was the tow crew? Where were the officials? I don't see any of this, and I have seen the video. I see nothing of that. I don't see an official or anybody even attempting to go up to him at that point. So right there in my mind worries me. If I was a driver, first off, I wouldn't have gotten out of the car. Well, I can't say I wouldn't have because I could have, depending on if my temper would have gotten the best of me. And I've been known to get a little hot-headed when I'm out on the track too. It happens.
You're in the heat
of the moment. Not me. I'm always nice and calm and mellow.
I'll ask the other half that. He'll tell you flat out, nope, that's not her on race pitch. Even with the bikes, if somebody takes the track, I have a tendency to wait at the finish line for them to come off the track.
Yeah, that's kind of your best bet. I didn't know how big that track was. It could have been a small one. And by the time, you figure these guys got to find a way to, I don't know where you don't know where they were stationed around the track or, saying they did have enough.
Even if they would have been stationed in the center of the track and ready to go and on the trucks, they should have at least had a truck in each corner and the fire crew in the center. No matter what, every track I've ever been to, that is at least the bare minimum of equipment that's in the middle of a track. Even if they don't want things in the track obscuring, the people's view. That is in the center of the track. So no matter where that fire is, they took a long time to get there in my eyes, too. We've had a lot of major instances
we had a car completely disintegrate around a driver. I want to say late 90s, early 90s, somewhere in there. And that's when our area really changed how we have people responding to the accident scene. Looked like it was nothing at first. The car caught on flames. The driver was still in the car, had a hard time getting out. The car melted around him. Fire crew did not have their fire gear on, did not have fire extinguishers ready, and were not by their truck when it happened. Now they are in full gear all night long with a fire extinguisher underneath their hand, ready to run with it if something happens in front of them. And we have fire guys stationed all throughout the track. There is at least 8 throughout the corners, if I'm counting correctly off the top of my head, at my home track of Granby Speedway. At least 8. And we have more in the pit area and more outside the pit gate as well, ready to respond, along with a full entire rescue truck that comes in every week as well with all the tools and equipment ready to go. We have multiple push trucks and tow trucks, which, again, when a sprint car event, you need, because they all have to be push started. They do not start on their own. So when the original reports were coming in that, you know, he hit him after they wrecked from a dead stop, I'm like sitting there right away going, that's not possible. These cars have to be pushed or he couldn't have just pulled away after he stopped his car. If you watch the video, and I know a lot of people are saying you shouldn't be, but, you know, for me as a media member, I had to see what happened to analyze it because I do have articles and stuff that people are requesting me to write about. The guy in front of Tony swerves. Reason he swerves is because all of a sudden he has a driver in full black gear, black suit, black helmet, in a poorly lit area of the track. If anybody who has never been inside a race car can comprehend this, it's like having tunnel vision when you're inside a vehicle. Picture yourself being inside a vehicle. Their helmets are strapped to their necks with their Hans devices, so you're limiting your range. You have roll cages and bars all around you, again, limiting your view. Which when one of the drivers said, I'm in a sprint car, and I know what it looks like, and he could have seen him. No, maybe he didn't see him because of the way he has himself hooked in that car, because everybody sits differently in their race car. You don't care who you are. You could put me in the car as somebody else, and my view is going to be different than their view for what I can see and how much movement I have, depending on how my gear fits me, depending on how my seat is in that car. If I want a higher seat, that I want to look up a little taller, if I want a lower seat in the car that I'm just barely seeing over my hood. There's so many factors that come into play for vision. You see the first car swerve. Obviously, at the last minute, he realized there was somebody there. They were pretty much nose to tail at that point. Tony's coming up with the car in front of him, all of a sudden swerving to the left. The next thing you know, he has somebody standing there in front of him pointing at him. Everybody's saying, well, he shouldn't have mashed the gas. He shouldn't have done this. He shouldn't have done that. Let me put it to you this way.
And I was reading,
ever
I posted
been in
up
accident,
an article that I read
or
that was
you
pretty
almost
good.
Almost were in an accident. There's things you're going to do that you're not going to realize you're doing. Because at that point, he just wants to get away from the guy.
Yeah.
There's
well,
so many things
you,
that come into play in this accident. But
the sprint
biggest
car,
thing is
you
never
with
get
your
out of your car.
Than,
right.
Then you're. So,
I mean
even if
know,
he did, if he gave the gas to try to kick the front end of the car away from the guy, and the guy was. I thought the guy was way too deep onto the track anyway when I seen him get out and head that way when the first car swerved around him.
Yeah,
and then if you're
following somebody,
you're reacting to that guy's movement before you even catch the guy on the track pointing his finger at you as well.
Exactly.
I remember
I mean,
it was,
so
I, went to,
things
I,
that
I went to Dover. I was following a car, and all of a sudden I saw this pink cloud come out from around him, and before I knew it, I was in the same mess. It was apparently somebody, he threw deer chunks all over the place. There was no way I was going to get away because
And
I didn't have time,
and
I was only
event,
doing 70.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to think about, too, even under parade laps and caution laps, they're still doing 30 to 40 miles an hour to keep those motors turning. So it's not like they're crawling or anything. They're still going at a good rate of speed. So let me ask you this. Would you go walk out in front of traffic going, well, I think I have time. I'm going to try it. Or are you going to wait until the car goes by you before you go out? I mean, it's tragic. It's horrible, and it happened. We can't undo the fact that it happened. But at the same time, tracks need to look at this, and drivers need to look at this, and they need to learn from this. I know from our perspective, I said again, at our tracks, our officials are right there with the driver. If they even start getting out of that car, and we had an altercation a couple weeks ago. driver came behind Victory Lane. He wasn't happy with the winner, and he went to get out of his car, and I had, you know, watching the security and the officials and everything in there tell him, go back to your pit area. Do not get out of your car. You will be, they will not be allowed to race. Tracks have rules where if you get out of your car on the track, you forfeit your prize money for the night. Again, there's so many things that are in place. In the heat of the moment, things happen, and we understand that. But at the same time, these drivers got to realize that the cars don't have headlights, first off. So you're not having a lot of visibility. A lot of these guys do have darker colored suits. A lot of the tracks are darker lit. They don't have the stadium lighting because this is your local hometown dirt track racing. Isn't your NASCAR Dover Downs. This isn't your Richmond. This isn't your Bristol. This is your backyard racing that you pay a couple bucks to go see them race every week. These guys are putting their blood, sweat, and tears into these cars. They're not there to make them, you know, big bucks. They're there to have a little fun and race.
Yeah, the track is not what you would call. I see high school baseball fields have better lights than some of these tracks. I mean,
right.
They just need enough light to be able to get around it.
Part of the, you know what, though? I like the tracks that are like just part of your race challenge. And the track I did, it is a darker track. It's not full bright. So, you know, you've got your shadows and everything, and you've got to figure out what's what on your track. And that's what makes racing exciting.
Yeah. Like I said, I think this kid got bumped. He didn't like it. He knew who did it. And I think he tried to, you know, copy something he saw on TV at a cup race. And
unfortunately,
usually when you got these guys in the cup series, the ambulance are blocking off where the drivers are going to go. And the driver knows if he's going to throw a helmet at a car, he's not going to go beyond where the safety vehicles are to do it.
There's no need to get that close if you're winging a helmet anyway. No offense. They wing pretty good. I know. If you wing it right, they go pretty far.
I've seen cup drivers, nationwide drivers, they get out there and they point that finger, but they're not going past where that ambulance or rescue truck is to do that.
And you can give it a good old wing and hit something. And it's something.
Yeah.
Again, it's horrible, and the tracks, you know, already allotted that they're not going to run their Wednesday night event, and they're still waiting to figure if they're going to run next weekend's event. And I feel horrible for the track, too, because, you know, the promoter and all of the owners and everybody, I'm sure, feel bad about what has happened. But now, at the same time, they're losing their income. And
personally,
I look at it this way. The sooner you get back in those cars, the easier it's going to be on those drivers. This is a lot of, I don't know how to phrase it, this is a lot of mental distraught for those who are involved, for those who've seen it, you know, for everybody that was there that evening. That's a lot to witness. And one of the biggest things, though, is the racing community will bind together. And I know everybody's mad right now, and the tempers are flaring right now. Why did this happen? Everybody wants to point a finger and lay the blame. Laying the blame and pointing the finger isn't going to solve the problem. It isn't going to bring him back. What we need to do is see that there was other problems in this that need to be resolved, such as the officials getting to the drivers keeping themselves under control, which I know is asking a lot because, again, in the heat of the moment, people do things. Can't help it. It happens. But here's where the tracks need to look at their program and go, okay, do I have enough fire crew there to respond to an accident? Do I have enough push truck crew guys here to respond to an accident? Do I have enough guys in my corner that he can go out there? Which one of those things they'll do is the flagger will go up and stand behind the car with a flag so that, you know, he's getting the attention of everybody else that, hey, don't come here. The car is broken down, you know. And, again, here's in-car radio. Say probably 90% plus of the tracks are now using in-car radios, if not all of them. Why wasn't somebody on the in-car radio telling the drivers, driver got out of his car, be careful, stay low. You know, we'll say that, too. Like, if we have a driver has to get out of their car, tell them, people are on the track, please stay low. Well, people are on the track, please avoid them in this area. This is where they're at. We communicate with the drivers. We tell them what's going on. Obviously,
yeah,
we can't communicate with the driver.
I don't
tell
like
it off at that point. But the ones that are in the cars, they could have been telling them, drivers on the track. But as I said, there's so many things that came to track.
This could be one of them. Like Grandview is a little more upper scale in comparison to some of these smaller tracks. And I can understand, you know, Stuart going there to draw some attention to the place, get some crowds in there. And
from what I understand, Canandaigua does have the different things, like I was saying. They should have the in-car and everything. They are one of the better tracks to go watch in-car racing at. You know, Canandaigua, which is the track that they were at. So I wouldn't see them not having in-car radio. It just seems like there's just so many things now that they need to go back and reevaluate. And, you know, like I can tell you right now, we're fielding questions from people, well, what do you plan to do to prevent this from happening? Well, again, here's where we look at our situation. We look at what we have and we say, we have our corner marshals there. We have our fire crew there. We have our tow truck and push truck crew there, which have extra people on the truck, again, to help with the driver. We have security at the track as well, again, to help restrain the drivers if something gets out of control or if the fans get out of control. These are things that they put into place because they don't want it becoming a problem. And this is where they need to start looking at what they're doing and say, hey, we need to make some changes. And it's not just Canandaigua, though. It's all tracks across the nation. Look at their programs. Look at the way they have their safety laid out. And it's basically pre-planning at this point. It's something that we do in the fire service that, okay, we train that if we have an auto accident, this is how we're going to lay out our stuff, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to respond. These tracks, okay, we have an accident in this corner. These people are going to respond. This person's going to check on the driver to make sure they're okay and make sure they stay in their car or by their car. This is what they need to be doing right now. And it's not just that track involved. It's all tracks. And even us as a track, the ones I work with, looking at the programs too, going, do we have any flaws? Is there anything we can do to make it better and safer? So, I mean, it's tragic, but we need to learn from it. Just like when we lose drivers in crashes because of the car structures, we need to look at it and say what failed and why, and how do we fix it?
Yeah, another thing to realize, too, is that video was taken from a cell phone camera, so therefore you're not going to get the wide look of everything that may have taken place prior, like you said about the safety crews getting out there and, blocking the car off in the corner. Like he might have just, like I said, as soon as they saw that him stopped and get out of the car, whoever was taking that shot was focused in on him. So you only got the width of what your cell phone camera is going to take.
At that point, you should have had an official coming into the scene of the picture. They had enough time that you should have had an official coming in. There was no official that came into that scene, even approaching or anything like that. And there should have been somebody in that scene visible because you had to be within range of him to even yell and come get back to his car. So there was no visible official that ever came into play on that video. The same with the fire crew. After he had been struck and already laying on the ground is when they finally pulled up. We are now 2 laps after the initial contact occurred, basically, on the track. 2 laps.
This
car, you're still, you know, regardless of the mechanism of injury or how he was injured, if he would have been injured in his car, their response time would have been the same as it was when they got there because of this. So, in his car, 2 minutes, or after he had gotten hit, it's still 2 minutes. That time frame doesn't change, that response time, which for me, as a fire person, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know, one of our things is you want to be there instantly, you want to check on that driver, you want to make sure they're okay. Because I've had some drivers, and I have some several ones that I work with too, that have been knocked unconscious, and if you wait too long to get to them, they've regained consciousness, so they're starting to come back too already. And, of course, the first words are out of their mouth are going to be, no, I never lost consciousness. I'm just a little winded from what just happened.
Yeah.
Which we all know is bull, but because they told us that and we weren't there to physically see them be unconscious at that point, we have to go with what they said. So
that's where
my response time is going to be critical because you've got to get there. You've got to take care of your drivers. You've got to look out for all your drivers. You know, those involved in the accident and those involved going around the track because if you don't notify them of where the accident is going to get bigger. if they're not paying attention, they're off in la-la land. It could get bigger, and it could put more people in harm's way.
Yeah, it's just one of these things. It seems like, now Stewart doesn't even know if he's going to race at Michigan. So, you know, he's touring up. This might be something he might consider. I mean, after all this, it might take him a while to get back into the car emotionally after.
It's horrible that he has to go through this. And that's one of the things people don't realize either is, you know, he has to deal with this. He has to live with this fact of, regardless of why it happened, it happened. And he has to deal with it now. And it's going to take him time, and he's going to end up needing to get some help. And there's a lot of recourse in everything that's going to happen for him mentally, you know. It's just, I think, and they come back home.
The thing that gets me is, like, how some of the reporting is. Like, I haven't seen, like, down here, just, it was pretty non-committal. It just said that Stewart was involved in an accident where driver was killed. The footage they cut off right before the impact, and they have the sheriff saying no charges are pending. Some people were saying that, it looked deliberate and all that. Some people were saying that he might be in a lot of trouble. That was on NBC News with Brian Williams, too, and he's a race fan. So I don't know why he went that way. He should have just said involved in this. The sheriff said no evidence of criminal intent or activity. Like, he didn't deliberately clip him. Which, you know,
right,
anybody that knows Stewart, you would think
that,
you know.
People are so quick to pass judgment.
What's that?
And these people that are so quick to pass judgment have never been in a race car. And even the one that said he is a driver and was saying, you know, he should have known better. Maybe he should have known better. But when you've got somebody coming at you, your first reaction is to get away from them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to hit the gas. And people are like, no, you hit the brake. I'm like, no. My first reaction is somebody's coming at me and I'm in my car. I'm hitting the gas to get away from them. You know, and that's just what you do. And everybody's like, oh, no, I'll hit the brake. I'm like, really? So you've had somebody approach your car already that you didn't know. So you just stopped and go, hey, do I know you? Do you want to murder me? No, you know, it doesn't happen that way. You want to get away from that person.
Yeah,
you know,
plus
Antonio,
you've got the cars behind you, too. You don't want to get run over by them by hitting the brakes.
Exactly. So you need to go and you need to get out of the way. And, again, it happened. We can't change the fact. And everybody, you know, with their speculations and their opinions or everything like that, isn't going to bring him back. I know, you know, even some of his family members, they were saying, were posting some really nasty things about Tony. And I'm sorry. I know you're mad and I know you're hurt. But to me, when you get to the level of what they were posting for some of that person's family members, it's kind of shocking because regardless of how it happens, you need to realize that there's fans and other people out there that are affected by it as well. Still need to keep that professional image because how you act now is going to reflect on him as a person.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's just a sad thing.
It is, and, you know, I can't say, you know, we're looking to purchase cars next year, and I'm actually going to go back behind the wheel driving. And I can't even say that I will never get out of car if somebody irritates me. I can't say it because you don't know. It's the heat of the moment. Anything can happen. And, you know, I do have a fiery temper when I'm out in that track, so if somebody does rub me the wrong way, yeah, I probably will want to go at them, but I'll be good. I'll wait for them to get off the track property so we don't do it on the track.
Yeah, that'd be your best bet. Especially,
yeah, we'll off the track properly.
You know, you would
okay.
You would think that all the time it takes to get it all unbuckled and hop out of the car.
Oh, that's actually
you'd have a chance
easy.
To
one
think about what you're
going
to do, but I guess you don't.
No, because it's not like they used to be when it comes to harnesses. The harnesses are just one button on top, and then, well, with the harness device, it makes it a little harder. But you shimmy yourself out, and obviously, as you've seen as quick as you could go from the video, you're in and out of that car. Now, for me, who's not coordinated yet, it'll take me a little longer. So, you know, it'll be a little bit slower reaction time. But these guys who are so used to popping in and out of those cars, they can do it really quick, and they can get in and out. But I don't care who you are or what your race, you shouldn't do it because you're putting yourself in harm's way, you're putting other drivers in harm's way, you're putting the safety crew, the officials, everybody else in harm's way when they have to go pull you back from the cars coming at you. And any driver who's ever gotten out of a car and has been restrained by an official and got combated with them should be calling that official up right now and going, thank you for protecting me. They need to do that because if it wasn't for that official, it could have been that driver. So they need to be going to those officials, no matter how mad they were at them at the time, go, thank you, because those officials just saved that driver's life, putting their own life in line at the same time.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, you got to say, well, what, now you look forward and say, well, what good can come of, you know, come of this?
What good can come from this is the tracks reevaluating their safety program, their way that they respond to accidents, and the way that they punish the drivers if they do not follow their rules. I did see one of the tracks tonight, actually right before I called in, had posted, in light of the situation, we are making some rule changes. There is a $500 fine if you get out of your track on the car now at this track before, you know, you're told to that you need to get out for safety reasons. So $500 fine, you forfeit all winnings for the evening, you forfeit all points for the evening, and you will be suspended for 1 to 2 weeks worth of racing.
Yeah,
and
that's
it has
the thing.
To be done. The precedent has to be set because, like I said, it's not just the driver's life that they're putting on the line, it's everybody's life they're putting on the line.
I know what they were saying was, like, this is, like, almost 1 year to the date where Smoke
broke his leg. Yep.
And,
at the same track.
At the same track.
At the same track, yeah, because it was walking Glen time, too, last year when he did it. And he was up at Canandaigua.
And from what I can gather, they, you know, the safety innovations they put into the car after he broke his leg is, like, some tube for the drive shaft and all this other kind of stuff. So, you know, even good things came out of that incident. But, you know, something like this is
well, that's why I'm a fan of the PSR series, because they put so many safety pieces into those sprint cars that they run in their series. And, you know, I wish other versions of the sprint car series would pick on what some of these pieces that they put in there for safety, because TSRS is really have their game together and they're looking out for the drivers. And when they do wreck, the flips aren't as violent. The cars aren't as badly torn up. I mean, they're still torn up. You're not going to avoid it, obviously, if you wreck. But Joe has done a fine job of looking at the safety pieces he can implement in there to make them safer.
Yeah, and that's, you know. But as far as that goes, that's one thing. But as far as incident like this, though, it's more like things, like you said, the track can do. You get out of your car and, you know, make it tougher. Make it less worthwhile for somebody to get out of their car and do that.
Yeah, I mean, losing points, losing money and being fined, that can hurt a small-budget team. A $500 fine could make or break them.
And that could be the difference between a set of tires or a transmission part or something.
Exactly.
So what do you got on tap this weekend? Anything
going
on at the old Green and View?
Yeah, my normally crazy schedule. Wednesday night will be at Phoenixville with the quarter midgets. We're getting better and better. We moved up in classes, so Allie's running a 160 motor now. And last week we got the car a little bit better dialed in, and she finished fifth and was on the lead lap. So we said that was a huge victory because we finally got the car comfortable for her. We still have some things we need to tweak, but, you know, Focus Shocks has really been working with us to get the setup right. And, you know, West Main Diner's been making sure we're fed really good, too. So we're getting there. We're getting better every week, and, you know, we're getting ready for the transition into our new division next year and all getting excited about that. And everybody's starting to pick out their paint schemes and their color, you know, their numbers and all that fun stuff. So we're getting excited. And then we go Friday night to Big Diamond, which is prelude to the Cold Cracker. So for the modified, it's $3,000 to win. It's a big race for the modified to get them ready for the even bigger race that's coming up for them. So definitely want to come on out to Big Diamond, and we also want to you know, say that we have Diamond Dog and his family in our thoughts and prayers too. The Big Diamond, we lost one of our young fans. Sean lost his battle to cancer, which is Diamond Dog's son. So, you know, we're thinking of them, and, you know all the racing community is here for them too if they need anything. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to Diamond Dog and his family on the passing of Sean. And then Saturday, we're heading back to Grandview, and our normal race program with the 358 modifieds, the sportsmen's, and the late models. And we only have a couple more races left at both tracks. Season's starting to wind down. Championship battles are starting to get a little tighter. Grandview has 4 points races left, I believe, including this weekend. Diamond Friday night's going to have the Roadrunners, the late models, and the modifieds in action. So, I mean,
Grandview,
there's tons of racing to be seen.
Don't Grandview have one of their big paid-out races coming up? Or?
Yep, September 15th is the Freedom 76er, $20,000 to win. That's our final regular season race, and then we have our Thunder on the Hill Halloween show, which will be, I believe it's the second weekend of October. That's coming
pictures,
up as well.
Who's been taking the pictures? Are you busy car owning?
I've actually been internetless. I keep teasing. I said I feel like I'm on Little House on the Prairie with us making the move. I said the city girl has been transplanted back into the country, so we just finally got internet back tonight.
Who's your internet people? I finally got on regular internet myself.
Comcast. We're still Comcast, but we're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Comcast didn't even offer cable services out here until like 2 years ago. So we're literally in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I'm sitting out in my office right now, and they have the bonfire going in the yard, and everybody's just having fun. So, you know, it's nice. It's country living. It's quiet. It's peaceful. But I am so spoiled by being a city girl and having a grocery store 5 minutes up the road, and now a grocery store is a half an hour away.
Well, at least it's the same here. At least about half an hour is... But the speed limit 70 mile an hour, so you can get a half an hour pretty quick.
Oh, no, our speed limit 35.
even on our country roads, like what's US 52, which is the main, the speed limit is 55 until you get to town, then it drops a bit. But
yeah, Mike likes to tease me because I'm definitely become city-fied, and now that I'm back in the country again, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm a little weird. But I'm adjusting. It's different.
Well,
it's too quiet.
Go out back and shoot your guns.
Well, yeah, we have the AR here, and we have the bow here, and he has a couple rifles. So, yeah, we can have fun in our backyard now, which is nice. And we have the swimming pool once we figure out how to get it open and cleaned and de-yuckified.
Your mom's house.
This is my mom and aunt's house, yeah. So we inherited it when my aunt passed away a couple weeks ago. So we've been working on cleaning it up, and I said my goal is to bring back the laughter and the fun that we used to have when I was a kid. So we've been cleaning it all up, which has been a major chore in itself, is to get it cleaned up and actually livable. And we're getting there little by little. It's just going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but everybody's rolling up their sleeves and pitching in and getting it done.
Well, welcome to the country there, kiddo.
Yeah, I know. I said it was 18 years to the day that I had moved out, that I moved back in. So it's kind of weird. But, you know, it's a nice, quiet neighborhood. It's, you know, great for the dogs. My dog loves having lots of area to run around in. And, you know, we have my mom's dog now, too. So we've got 2 dogs, 4 cats, all the kids. Depending on the day, we have 5 kids. And then my driver and her sister like to hang out here, too, so she's here. And then we have one of our other teammates and his girlfriend will come over and hang out because this is going to be the race shop, too. So race shop, photography studio, yeah, we got it all here. It's kind of cool.
You know, when you had the truck race at Eldora, I wonder how big that track is because they were talking to Ron Hornaday. I had it on the press conference table. So they came to they came to Withville and tested, which is Wythe County Speedway down here. It's a pretty high banked half mile. So,
I think Eldora is only a half mile, isn't it? I don't think dirt tracks are smaller.
Well, Bridgeport was like 5/8. was a pretty big
burn. Bridgeport's 5/8, but I believe they were shrinking it. I think it's considered a half mile now.
Did they? And how big's Grandview?
Grandview's a third of a mile.
How big?
What was that?
How big, what did you say?
Grandview's a third mile with 33-degree
okay, so
banking.
Even smaller.
Yep. Yeah, with 33-degree banking and it turns.
Yeah, that's pretty steep.
Yeah.
See, of course, you get around them pretty quick. That's why I was wondering about the size of the track that Stewart was on. If it's a third of a mile, they're coming, you know, they get around there quick.
Me too. Even on the pace laps, that we still have enough time that we can get up to our drivers before the cars are even back around. And that's with the guys running up the embankment, too.
Yeah.
We make our officials work.
Hey, why not?
Yeah, it's all good.
We get into the race for nothing, so at least you get to do something.
Well,
Tammy, it's been pretty interesting. It's been a sad weekend after all that, but thanks for returning to the show to give us your safety insights.
Yeah, as soon as we have the office up and running a little bit better, I can come on more regular again. But we got to get everything set up. It's been a nightmare, but we're getting there little by little. We just keep smiling and going. It's almost there.
Well, the big guys are going to Michigan this week, so it should be so don't forget to go on the page and make your pick. We used to do them on the air, so I don't even.
I'll have to see who
I
like.
How about Allmendinger winning that race, though?
I like Allmendinger, but that's just me.
He's a little guy.
I'd like to see him win. Yeah, I like seeing him win. I think that was good.
And you figure, it looked like it was going to come down between him and Marcus Ambrose, which either way, AJ made the chase now. It's his first ever Sprint Cup Series win with that. So it was pretty fun to see his car owner, Brad Daugherty, in the broadcast booth jumping up and down. 7'2" former basketball player. Probably the tallest guy in the garage area, period. But it was a pretty good win for AJ. And that was the end of the race was a fun one to watch. They were sitting there rubbing
and... I can actually watch.
What's that?
I have internet and cable now, so I can actually watch TV and watch a race.
Hey, and if you get DVR, you can even record the stuff you can't sit and watch live.
I'll tell Mike we have to get DVR. He'll probably go, okay.
Got to get DVR.
You
get the HD package?
I don't know. I didn't handle
the high
that.
Definition?
I'm just a girl.
The high
yeah,
definition.
I'm just a girl.
You got a flat screen TV?
Oh, yeah.
A big one?
Yeah. We said we want a bigger one. They all laughed at me. I said, I want like a 6-footer.
Hey, they make them 100 inches.
Oh, my God. That'd be too big.
Yeah, well, I got a 43. Believe it, we picked it up and shoved it in the back of the Mustang. Box and all. But that's perfect
that
size
we'll
for
the
his living.
The
well, you get
the
them LED with 3D now. And you get them, to see the high definition, you got to get the HD package. This way, and then you get the DVR and you can record the stuff you... See, I got the DirecTV.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, the Comcast offers the same stuff, but.
Yeah. When
you
MATV
go,
is the only thing we don't have.
What's that?
Except we don't have MATV, but we survive without it.
What's that? Oh, MAV TV?
Yeah, we don't have that.
We got that Velocity Channel.
Oh, no fair.
There's two motorsports channels, since the demise of Speed. All right, well, we'll let you go. Coming on and filling us in there. We'll get back into the swing of things. And good luck with the house. And we'll talk to you all later.
Sounds good. Have a good night, Vince.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Light, and that's Tammy Yallman, who works with me on Garage Talk Live. She handles all my Northeast stuff. She'll be going down to Dover in a couple of weeks for the third race in the Chase, I'm sure. Handles all the stuff up there that I don't do anymore. Did the race yesterday. It was a good race for road course. A.J. Allmendinger running door-to-door on a late restart with Marcus Ambrose and with one lap to go. Dinger was able to pull ahead and maintain the lead with Ambrose coming in second. It was a battle for the chase, really, between those two, and whoever won it was going to get in. Kurt Busch, who finished third, was already in the chase. Kyle Larson, a good run for him coming in fourth. He's showing some progress. He's finishing closer towards the front, so look for him to get a win eventually. Maybe not this year. Carl Edwards in fifth. He was carrying the sponsor's banner with the Cheez It 355, and he had the Cheez It Ford. Logano was sixth. Kevin Harvick was seventh. Eighth was Greg Biffle. Ninth, Matt Kenseth. Tenth, Brian Vickers. There was a tie for leading the most laps between Jeff Gordon, who was on the pole for the race, and A.J. Allmendinger, who only led twice himself for 29 laps. Of course, Ambrose led twice for 20 laps, so out of there's 78 laps led between Gordon, Ambrose, and Allmendinger out of the 90 laps that were run, which was regulation, nothing fancy there. No, it was a green-white checker finish in regulation time, so didn't have to go extra. They were getting a little touchy on fuel, and they were able to finish in regulation. The late yellow helped whoever was iffy have enough there for the end. The average speed, 90 mile an hour, 2 hour, 26 minutes and 48 seconds, and the margin of victory, 1.16 seconds. As far as the chase rundown goes right now, and it's Dale Earnhardt Jr. leading the points and the wins over Brad Keselowski and Jimmy Johnson. Jr. sweeping Pocono and winning Daytona gives him 3 on the season. It's probably his best year in quite some time right now with 3 wins. Jeff Gordon, he's in fourth place with 2 wins over Joey Logano, Carl Edwards, and Kevin Harvick, who has 2 wins, points being the tiebreaker there. When you go to your single-digit winners, start with 8th place with Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Amarola, Kurt Busch, and now Allmendinger. That's your single digits through 12th place. And then 13th through 16th, which is the cutoff, but it's Kenseth, Newman, Larson, and Bowyer were all winless. And then they're showing 17 through 20, who still has a shot to make the top 16, and that's Biffle in 17th, Casey Kane 18th, Austin Dillon in 19th, and 20th is Marcus Ambrose. So if he can get enough points, he's got 584 points. Clint Bowyer's on the bubble with 634 points right now, so you're looking at a 50-point difference. So that could be a difference between a race win and a last-place finish. So we got 2 more races to go, I think, before we got Bristol coming up. Let's check the schedule, see what's coming up before the chase. It's Michigan, Bristol, Atlanta, and Richmond. 4 more to go, and then the chase begins. We will have Gil Smith down in Richmond for the last race before the chase. He's a camera guy, and check up on our Facebook page. He's our Richmond correspondent for the most part. I filled in for him last year in April. Then it was pretty neat, so I'll have to get to do that again. But anyway, that's our show for tonight. Hope everybody enjoyed listening. Special thanks to Erica Ender Stevens for joining us on the air. And let's see who's got a shot at Michigan. Did I? It's a Ford track. It's going to be a tough one to call. Maybe Joey Logano. We'll go with Joey Logano for see if he can get his third win of the season. He's going to be my pick for the race this weekend. I know I picked Brad Kay for Pocono, but it didn't work out. So I want to go with Joey Logano. So if you want to make your picks, go to our Facebook page, and I'm going to post up on there and time for Michigan picks, and then in the comment section you can make your picks as well. I'm Vince Bonfigli. Thanks for joining us. Good night and good racing.